Hello and welcome to the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 23rd of August 2015. My name's T.R.P. Watson, and this week I'm joined by Gareth James, Paul in London, and Nick from Partially Obstructed View. We're now going to talk about What's It All About, Bacharach Reimagined. This is a musical piece directed by Stephen Hoggart, conceived by Carl Ryabko and David Lane Seltzer, based on the songs of Burt Bacharach. They list on the website lots of songs, and they are all immediately memorable and connected with some particular singers, Dionne Warwick, Dusty Springfield, and of course Cilla Black. Now, Gareth, tell me more about this production, what you thought of it.
I think this is a really interesting and very original way of putting together someone's kind of back catalogue. I mean, we've seen lots of what are often called jukebox musicals. This isn't a jukebox musical. This is, I think, a kind of homage to Burt Bacharach's songwriting. And what Kyle Ryabko has done is he's actually rearranged a lot of the songs, and he's kind of linked them together so that they sort of weave in and out, and you get snatches of one, and then you get the whole of another, and then you get just a line or a motif from another song. And it kind of feels like a very organic 90 minutes where it all kind of fits together, really. And it does take you through virtually his whole back catalogue, which is extraordinary. I mean, it's, you know, the man is an extraordinary songwriter and has left us with him. Well, he's still with us, but has actually created an awful lot of music, really. And so you get complete songs, you know, medleys, mashups, individual lines, and all sorts of things. And the styles include, I mean, some of them have been rearranged, you know, as a rock track or reggae or blues or solos and ensemble pieces and lots of different combinations. There are seven performers. And the whole thing is, frankly, just captivating. I mean, it's just like a musical feast. And I mean, there wasn't a moment wasted for me. It's actually one of the most perfect evenings I've ever spent in the theatre in terms of, you know, everything being absolutely right. It's particularly poignant. You mentioned Cilla Black. It's particularly poignant because I saw it just after she died. And the first song I ever heard was Anyone Who Had a Heart in her version, because, as you said, in America it was Dionne Warwick and here Cilla Black, although they released the Dionne Warwick track here as well. And quite a while later, I sort of went back into Burt Bacharach because he did a collaboration with Elvis Costello where they wrote between them original music, Costello doing the lyrics and Bacharach doing the music. And here we are with this show, starting with Anyone Who Had a Heart, and of course taking its title from another song that's associated with Cilla Black, which is Alfie, because What It All About is the first line of the song Alfie. So it was a particularly poignant, I think, seeing it sort of that week, because Cilla Black was associated as sort of one of his, in his early days, one of his kind of collaborators. She did a number of his songs with George Martin. And indeed, when they did Alfie, he actually came over and played piano on that recording. So there is a sort of an interesting connection there. When you walk into the Menier, what they've actually done in the Menier is really quite fascinating, because it seems bigger than it normally is, because they've covered the stage with a kind of patchwork of carpet. And then all around it, there's sort of standard lamps and table lamps. And there are sofas and easy chairs sort of rising in three tiers at either side with audience in. So the audience are on the sides of the stage as well as in front of the stage. And then musical instruments are kind of hanging at the back all around. And there's an incredible intimacy and coziness about it. You kind of feel as if you're going to someone's living room and sort of sitting in and being entertained. And I love that. I mean, Christine Jones and Brett J. Banakis are the design team, and I thought that was an incredibly clever, incredibly original way of presenting it. And Stephen Hoggart. Well, Stephen Hoggart's known for movement. I mean, probably most famous for Black Watch, but other things. And his staging and his movement is frankly quite inspired, because he actually makes the evening flow organically in the same way as the music is kind of put together organically. So every movement is actually choreographed, but it doesn't seem unnatural. It seems completely natural, almost as if the sort of lyrics are determining what the movement should be. And just to describe that, it's very hard to describe, but there's one particular moment where they change a guitar, and as they change a guitar between the lead man Kyle Ryabko and one of the ladies, it becomes an embrace, and then it continues as a dance whilst the song is being sung. So it's just an extraordinary thing. It's a kind of very intuitive sort of way of interpreting music, really. And what that means, because of the design and the movement, is actually just as beautiful to watch as it is to hear, which is the most extraordinary thing about it. The US cast, I think four of the US cast come over, three others in addition to Carl Riabko, and then they've been supplemented by three British/Irish new people. And they're all absolutely brilliant. But Carl Riabko, you have to say, you know, he's not only done the arrangements, but he's the musical director, he's a multi-instrumentalist, he's the lead singer. And it was just, I mean, for me, just a sort of towering performance, really. And as if the evening wasn't perfect when it ended, we kind of walked out of the Menier, and there were these seven buskers with ukuleles busking "Raindrops Keep Falling on Your Head," and it was the cast. And I thought that was the most perfect end to a very, very perfect evening. So absolutely adored this show. And I am I do like his music, but, you know, frankly, even if you didn't like Bacharach's music, this is just a beautiful, beautiful piece of theatre.
We're now going to talk about Bye Bye Birdie at Ye Olde Rose and Crown in Walthamstow. This is another one of All Star Productions, who seem to be the resident company there, and produce some really rather superior work, given all the raves we tend to get about their shows. This latest one, Bye Bye Birdie, music by Charles Strauss, lyrics by Lee Adams, book by Michael Stewart, appears to be a take on, well, when Elvis Presley went into the army, because the story seems to be about the same. Although I think Birdie is named after Conway Twitty rather than Elvis Presley, because I think that would have been a bit too obvious for them. Gareth, tell me more about this and what you thought of it.
Well, this is a Charles Rouse show, and Charles Rouse is most famous, of course, for Annie, which is still going in productions all over the world and is currently touring the UK. And this was actually his first show. So this goes back to 1960. I'd actually only seen it once in a Guildhall School of Music and Drama production, probably about 10 years ago. And my memory of it was, well, this is going to be a tough one for the old Rose and Crown. But they'd had a great hit with another Charles Rouse, It's a Bird, It's a Plane, It's Superman, just, I think, last year or the year before. So they obviously decided to do another. As you say, it takes its inspiration from the sort of as Elvis Presley becoming a GI thing. And we've got Conrad Birdie here, who's a singer who's about to become a GI, and his record company boss, who's called Albert, decides to spin this story. I wouldn't have used the word spin then, of course, and create a sort of photo and TV opportunity, which is around a last kiss for a fan. And young Kim, who's 15 years old, is selected, and her and her family go on to the Ed Sullivan show. And it all starts to go wrong because Kim's jealous boyfriend, Hugo, comes onto the scene at this point. Throughout it, there's a parallel story of Albert, the record company boss himself, who loses his secretary and also his kind of love interest, Rose, because he's just done nothing to make the relationship go anywhere, largely because he's got this incredibly possessive mother called May. And then Conrad does enlist and heads off, and then Albert finally sort of does something about his relationship with Rose. So it's a fairly sort of simple story. The first thing I think to say about their staging is it's probably one of the best pieces of design I've ever seen at the old Rose and Crown. And Andrew Yon has kind of created a sort of red, black and checkered diner, and he sort of put adverts and records, vinyl records, on the walls around it. And as you go in, there are sort of 50s tunes being played as if they're on a jukebox. And then there's great costumes from Wyon Walklett as well, which kind of really give you that period feel. So we've got a kind of spot on late 50s, early 60s period feel. I thought it got off to a bit of a shaky start, partly I think because the material at the beginning isn't particularly strong, and partly because I think that the playing style hadn't kind of settled really. But it certainly picked up significantly, and by the second half in particular I felt it was really motoring. There's particularly good choreography from Anthony Whiteman. There's a great set piece called Baby Talk to Me, which was really well done, using the whole space. And it is actually quite a big space because of the way it's designed. And there's a really good piece called The Shriner Ballet, which is also very funny. So there's lots of room for that movement, and I thought that worked quite well. And then you've got the band within the set right at the back, who are in view and they're sort of in costume. And in this particular occasion, the regular MD here, who's Aaron Klingham, has kind of gone for a more brassy, woodwindy sound than some of the other stuff I've seen here. And the numbers, I mean, it's a good score, but there are actually songs that you might have heard outside the show. You know, Put On a Happy Face is something I think one hears outside the show, and A Lot of Living to Do. And there's a song called Kids, which you would know, but I can't sing it to you because my voice is so terrible. I enjoyed it very much. The performances, I think, were particularly good all round, really. They did sort of perform in a fairly broad, loud kind of style, which suited the comedy of the material, really. But then there's an incredibly feisty, sexy performance from Liberty Buckland, who plays this Rose, this love interest of Albert. And that, in the original production, was actually Chita Riviera. So she's, I mean, very, very good performance following in those shoes. And then the teenage fan, Kim, is played by Abigail Matthews, who we've seen before on The Fringe. She seems to be like a very young Imelda Staunton to me. I was kind of thinking that if they did a biography of Imelda Staunton, she'd be absolutely spot on for that role. Really. Some nice cameos. There's a cameo of Kim's dad, Harry Hart. There's Jane Ashley, who's this acid-tongued mother of Albert's, May. And then Hugo, the boyfriend, is played by somebody called Benedict de la Bedoyer, which I thought was an amazing thing. And then Stephen Lloyd, who has to play a young boy, has to play the younger brother, Randolph, to Kim. So it was it's a rarely seen musical, and therefore it's a great opportunity to catch up with it. It's not a groundbreaking musical, it's not a musical that's going to change your life, but it's actually a lot of fun. And who knows when we're going to see it again? I mean, for as long as I've been interested in musicals, it's only turned up once. That was in a drama school production. So I think it's, you know, they are taking an essential role at the Walthamstow, because they are, you know, putting on these musicals that we rarely have a chance to see that are worth seeing. Because when you see early musicals from people who went on to do bigger things, I think it's very informative and sort of fills in their kind of musical biographies, really. So a big recommendation from me.
We're now going to talk about F***ing Men by Joe Pietro. This is being done at the King's Head Theatre, which first did it in 2009, and after that it went into the West End, well, the Arts Theatre anyway. Paul, tell me more about this play and what you thought of it.
Well, first of all, I think the Arts Theatre would consider itself part of the West End. But anyway, it's an interesting piece, actually. I think this is part of the King's Head gay series of plays over the next month, running through most of August. And what this piece is really, it's taking the play, the 19th century play, which was banned when it first came out, La Ronde, and pairing characters in scenes and their connections after sexual encounters in a big city. So rather than being in a 19th century city, it's 21st century, rather, London or New York, I think, as it was originally envisaged when it transferred over to New York. But it's fascinating, actually, because in the time that it was written, the gay scene as well has changed so much. So the characters here, you've got the escort and the soldier and the graduate and a student, and the student and a married guy, two married men, a married guy and a porn star and a playwright, then a playwright and an actor and a journalist and the escort, which brings it all back to the original character, which you're starting out with. And the fascinating thing about it is that while watching it, you realize that this is almost a slice of life from the mid to late noughties period of gay life, but it's not as entirely relevant, perhaps, as it is today. Although having looked at, you know, the Twitter reactions to people talking about the piece over the last month since they've seen it, people think it was, you know, funny, insightful, and thoughtful, and quite provocative. And plus, there's plenty of full frontal nudity. But for me, actually, I thought it was actually interesting that this piece, which I believe I'd seen when it first came out in the King's Head, it was quite, you know, very on topic and very, you know, very current at that point in time. In the years since, and it hasn't been that long since, it seems to feel more like a period piece. That's not to say it's a terrific piece of acting for many of the cast. They are working in very difficult, challenging conditions because the piece not only demands for them to get naked, but also, you know, create a scene quite quickly. The King's Head Theatre is quite warm in the summer as well, so there's quite a lot of effort from the ensemble cast to actually make it all happen. But actually, the surprise for me, I think, was how it doesn't feel as current as what you would expect. So the porn star is talking about starring in videos. There's no mention of camming or, you know, streaming. And I don't believe there's actually any references to smartphones or things like Grindr, which, you know, are now ubiquitous. But having said that, it's, you know, as in terms of sort of some of the gay fare, which has been put up in theatres around London, this is probably one of the more thoughtful pieces. And it's probably because it has the format of the source material, La Ronde, to actually give it a bit of framework and a structure to it.
What do you think about it, Nick?
Yeah, I agree. It's very well done. I mean, I didn't think it mattered so much that it wasn't totally up to date because, I mean, as you say, it is based on the structure. It's a much older structure. I think it is the sort of play that you could make tiny little adjustments and, you know, say that some of the people on their met on Grindr and little details like that, but I don't really think it matters. I think I saw it the first time around as well, and I think both times I did feel that of the gay theatre I've seen, it is much better than most of what you see. It's, I think, especially in sort of the 90s and noughties, there was, because kind of gay theatre was dominated by HIV and AIDS, it was kind of taken to a real dark, and there's a real kind of self-loathing to a lot of gay theatre, which is kind of now is, in stuff that's being written now, is starting to move out of there. But this was something that really felt fresh in that it's strangely sweet, even though it's kind of about sex. It makes its point kind of convincingly that it's about people connecting as people, not just as kind of random bodies. And I think it actually, it's the sort of point that could have really fallen flat, because essentially, you know, most people are going to go see this because it's got a kind of explicit title and naked men in it. So it could feel kind of disingenuous, but it doesn't. And, you know, I think Joe DiPietro is too good a writer for it to come across that way. It is very well written, and it for most of the cast, it's well performed by as well. Not all of them are great, but most of them are very good. And I'm not crazy about the restaging of the seating in the King's Head, because it's always, it's been a tricky space always in there, and they've changed it into a thrust, but now quite a lot of the central bank doesn't actually face the stage, which is a bizarre way to do things and just makes it a lot more uncomfortable than it already was. But yeah, the production is really strong again, and it's kind of a surprisingly likable and strong play, I think.
Actually, yes, I think you've really hit the hammer on the head that it lures you in at the premise that actually it's quite something salacious, but actually it's quite a sweet story because it's not really about sex. It's about the connections that happen either before or after it and what then happens next, really, which is quite fascinating. And I think, you know, as you're right, it's a testament to Joe DiPietro's writing to actually have done such a interesting piece. And he's obviously gone on to bigger and better things, and it'll be interesting to see what he does, what he continues to do on Broadway and at other theatrical avenues.
And it's interesting that the soldier, who's played by Harper James, the first character we meet and follow, even though obviously as the structure is, we don't really see him after that, but you do keep getting references to him. So there's kind of a through line of a single character going through, even as the story keeps moving on to different people.
Yes, all told, very good show and well worth catching.
We're now going to talk about Playboy of the Western World, which is the play by J.M. Singh, which was first performed in 1907 and caused riots, possibly because they didn't like the depiction of Irish country people, especially people from Mayo, which is where this play is set. We have a young man who turns up in a village claiming to have killed his father, and he becomes something of a celebrity. This play was recently performed at the Old Vic in 2011, where it was directed by John Crowley and starred Robert Sheehan, Neve Cusack and Ruth Negga. This production, slightly smaller scale, is on at the Little Theatre in Southwark Playhouse, directed by Paulina Kalinina, and is presented by Folia Dur Productions. Nick, tell me more about this production, what you thought of it.
This is the production company that, at the old Southwark Playhouse, or the previous Southwark Playhouse, which has been quite a few of them, did a couple of productions. I think there was an obscure Tennessee Williams called Summer and Smoke and I'm a Camera. So they were some strong shows, and this is a very well done show, I thought. I don't know whether it's been edited, because I've only seen it the once before, which was that Old Vic production, but I did like it a lot more here than I did at the Old Vic. The only real problem I had with it is that the production goes for what is presumably a very authentic collection of rural early 20th century Irish accents. It's the sort of thing that I will tend to, you know, my ear will tune into after a few minutes. And for the vast majority of the cast, it did. But there were a couple of actors who, even by the end, I was just catching about one word in three and trying to kind of guess at what they were trying to say, which is not ideal. But for the majority of the cast, it was all right. But there is Sophie Dixon, who plays Pegeen, who's quite the sort of the major love interest in the story. So that was a bit of a problem for me. And it's unusual because, like I said, I don't normally have trouble with accents. I kind of tune into them after a while. But this is really going for a very authentic sound, and it's possibly a little bit alienating to a non-Irish audience. So I think, you know, the one thing I would have changed was to maybe tone down the accents a bit to make it a bit more accessible. But despite that, I really quite enjoyed the show. It's kind of a strangely sort of sweet little story of what turns out to be quite a sort of shambolic little man who's not really been anything in his life. And he's kind of run off and turned up in this incredibly isolated little pub. It's just a little room in a house somewhere, and it's the closest thing to a pub for miles around. And it's probably the handful of people we see there in the play is probably the majority of the population for miles around. And because he's got this story about having killed his father, how much of it is true, we find out as it goes on. Because of this, kind of the conceit of the play is that instead of condemning him for it, everybody in the town kind of sees him as a kind of great celebrity, and he becomes a big sort of sex symbol for all the young women there. And so it's kind of got a tongue-in-cheek conceit behind it, and I think that the production really latches onto that, and really I think it quite successfully gives you that impression of quite an eccentric little tragicomic story, because it doesn't all really work out for everybody in the end. And yeah, it's well paced. I thought it plays straight through without an interval. Like I say, I think it might have some cuts in there, because from the main thing I remember from the Old Vic production is the title of the play gets repeated in the play kind of ad nauseum, which it's only about two or three times actually here. So either I was remembering it wrong, or they've edited it down a bit. And yeah, I think it does kind of keep you a bit at arm's length with the accents, but apart from that, I enjoyed it. What did you think of it?
I also had a bit of a problem with Pegeen Mike's accent. It was a little bit too strong. I mean, you could always get the sense of what she was saying, but sometimes you'd lose individual words, which was a slight problem. But overall, I enjoyed it quite a lot. I mean, it has one actor I've seen quite a lot in things, Christopher Logan. He was a name I'd seen before, but obviously we had one actor who'd been in Little Malcolm and another actor who was in Ocean's Shadow, so they've been hanging around the Southwark Playhouse for a bit. But I found it actually a bit more entertaining than the one at the Old Vic. I think the one at the Old Vic was, you know, in a way that often happens in big theatres, you get a rather starry cast rather than an appropriate cast, and they try to big up the roles rather than being more of an ensemble. And this felt like a very good ensemble piece, although obviously you're most interested in Christie, the playboy, and Pegeen and the widow. I mean, the widow, I had to look it up. She is, I forget the name of who it was. she was age appropriate because she's only meant to be in her sort of early 30s or something, and is sort of, you know, she is the young widow, she is a bit of a threat. But she's also interesting that she's taken in by Christie just as she seems to be taken in by Christie just as much as anybody else. Perhaps she's not totally taken in by him, but it's that he represents safety for her. She's struggling on her own as the widow, and she's going to have to make some kind of either political marriage, or probably it is going to have to be a political marriage. It's not going to have to be something for love, and she's seeking to get out of it, and he is this escape, and he does represent that escape for everybody, this playboy. And I think when they're confronted, as we probably don't want to give away too much of the plot, although it is a 108-year-old play, but when you are confronted with the reality of the murder, which we get through various parts later in the play, the entire village do rethink their idolization of him, because they don't quite like, you know, they like the idea that he might have murdered his father, and don't know that they really want to know that he did. I like that turnaround that you get within this play, and you know, that the kind of strange morality, which they would like the rogue but they don't like the villain, and perhaps that's what they're finding attractive in him. But overall, I thought it's a very good production, and given the previous two productions that this company have done, I think I might keep an eye out for them in the future, because it could be rather interesting to see what they get up to next.
You can find us at AYULTP on Twitter, on the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast page on Facebook, on the web we are AYULTP.com, and the podcast can also be found on both iTunes and Stitcher, where you can leave a review. Thank you, goodbye.